From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Economists say the current economic slowdown is almost over. But for the workers who've been laid off, from new hires to CEOs, many are still feeling the pinch of the 90s boom economy gone bust. For younger workers experiencing their first economic downturn and older workers who have never been unemployed, what's it like to live the laid-off life? Earlier, I spoke with Wall Street Journal reporter Greg Hipp. I asked him about the latest consumer confidence numbers and their potential impact on the job market.
The latest consumer confidence numbers suggest a pullback in consumer expectations on the economy. And what you can see in that report is continuing concerns about the job market. Basically, we had more people saying that they don't think jobs are plentiful. We had people feeling that, in fact, employment opportunities are more scarce. And this is basically consistent with the information we have out there. I mean, there are signs all over that the economy is slowly but surely coming into a recovery phase after a recession. But the job market is not exactly roaring back with it. The numbers we look at every week of people collecting new unemployment insurance claims, for example, suggest that the improvement there has slowed down considerably. We're sort of at a steady state, if you will, of basically zero job growth.
Now, in a recovery phase, re-employment typically lags recovery. Is there something unusual about this recovery?
You're absolutely right. In recoveries, it's common for businesses to wait several months to be sure that the improvement in sales really is here to stay, because they don't want to just hire people then lay them off again, you know, 4 weeks later because it was just a temporary improvement. So indeed, it would take probably a few months to see whether there was any unusual lag going on here with respect to hiring. So I don't see anything here yet to suggest this is any worse than usual. But there are a couple of things that are special about the current phase, and the main thing is productivity. One thing that we do seem to have good evidence on is that businesses are managing to boost the amount of output they get per worker.
That's hopeful.
At a very brisk rate. And that's a good thing long term, because, I mean, higher productivity is ultimately what delivers us a higher standard of living. But in an environment where the overall economy is growing only modestly, it means that basically there aren't nearly as many workers needed to fuel the recovery. So it could lead us to a prolonged spell of high unemployment.
So first to the economy then. Is there now firm confidence that we're on a recovery slope here?
Oh, I would think so, definitely. I think even the bears on the economy who'd been holding out for more information have finally capitulated and said, yes, if they had to gamble, they'd say, yeah, the recession is over, the recovery has begun. You'll get people sort of disputing when the recession ended, you know, all the way from like last November to perhaps this very month, February. But the signs are just too strong and too persistent and too widespread. We have had really strong housing sales. We've had a leveling off, as they said, not a big improvement, but a leveling off of job losses. We've had remarkably strong retail sales. All these things really do suggest that the economy is indeed growing again.
So if a recovery is on, is it going to feel like a recovery, given that we've come out of a boom? Are we going back to a boom? And if we don't, will Americans even feel that there's been a recovery?
I think the answer is maybe. Let's keep something in mind here, Tom. I mean, from the consumer's point of view, they barely felt this recession to start with.
Yeah.
Consumer spending never really went down, which is very unusual for our historic experience. And one of the reasons it didn't go down is their real incomes continued to grow very strongly. We had restrained inflation and pay increases still well over 3%. That meant the average household, as long as they were still employed, had pretty good income gains with which to keep spending. And throw into that the fact that mortgage rates came down a lot, enabling a lot of people to refinance and free up extra cash flow that way, a lot of people never really felt the recession. So in that regard, those people probably aren't going to feel like, you know, it's a strong recovery.
So we had a funny combination then of many people who scarcely felt the recession, but many others who lost their jobs.
Absolutely. There were certainly a lot of job losses, and indeed the job losses were fairly consistent with what we've seen in other recessions. Now, a disproportionate amount of them were probably among people who had poor job security to start with. It's not a new thing, sadly, that those who were last hired were therefore first fired. There was also a pretty big contingent of white-collar people who work for technology firms, who also lost their jobs this time around because of the extent of the bust that we saw in technology spending. But that said, we had considerable job losses, so the strong wage gains were not much use to those who were not, unfortunately, able to hold on to their jobs.
I wonder if the experience of being laid off is different in a recession that isn't acutely felt by many of the people around you. You don't have a job, but your peers are going right on with their life.
I mean, I think you're absolutely right, Tom. I mean, being laid off during a recession is, I think, quite different from being laid off in a boom, for the simple reason that it's a lot harder to find your next job. But one of the characteristics of a capitalist economy like ours is that there's a lot of churn. People are being hired and fired all the time in any given month. The thing that's different about a recession is that while the pace of firing remains fairly high, the pace of hiring starts to slow down a lot. And indeed, that is one of the things that did happen over the last 12 months. And indeed, the duration of unemployment for the typical person who is unemployed now has gone up a lot in the last year. I think the latest statistics suggest that the typical person is unemployed for about 9 weeks before they find a new job, and that compares to 6 weeks a year ago.
Do you have a sense of what job sectors are most likely to bounce back earliest?
I think one of the pleasant surprises we're seeing is that a lot of the job sectors that were really hammered after the September 11th terrorist attacks are actually coming back. For example, there were hundreds of thousands of layoffs in the hotel, hospitality, restaurant, and air travel industries. We've actually seen some of those companies, such as airlines, recalling some of the people they laid off because the hit to demand did not turn out to be as persistent as we feared. So a lot of those sort of entry-level service-type jobs could actually start coming back, and indeed are coming back right now. The tougher question will be people who got into very specialized areas of technology, for example, those who worked for information technology help desks in companies, because that's an area where the decline in capital spending and the cutbacks across the board have been especially severe.
How about the impact of the war on terror on high-tech industries in particular? There's been a lot of emphasis on more Pentagon spending, on more high-tech security and new research efforts. Might that translate into jobs in some regions of the country?
There's almost no question that we are going to see some boost to certain types of demand for certain types of jobs out of this big boost in defense spending. Already you hear about companies in the military and defense sector beefing up their hiring and their research in those areas. But that's probably just taking away from other areas of the economy that were going to be serving more civilian purposes. So it's not so much new demand or new technology that we're going to be developing here, Tom. It's more of a displacement of resources from one part of the economy, the civilian economy, to another part of the economy.
Americans became accustomed in the 90s to a 5% unemployment rate, which was historically very good. Are we headed back there, or are we permanently at a higher level of unemployment, or at least for a while?
The jury is out on that one, Tom. I mean, a lot of people were surprised that we were able to go down to a level of unemployment at like 4% that we had not seen since the 50s and the 60s. And I don't think there's any firm view out there as to whether that we can, in fact, return to that in a sustainable way. I'm personally quite optimistic. It was striking the extent to which we were able to get down to that unemployment rate and not see a big takeoff in inflation. And we have made a lot of strides with respect to things like welfare reform and so forth, which have enabled a lot of people who are chronically unemployed to develop a stronger attachment to the workforce. Those things suggest to me that while I don't think we're heading back to a 4% unemployment rate soon, I don't think 5% in the next few years is necessarily out of the question.
Greg Ipp is a reporter with The Wall Street Journal. He spoke with us from Washington. Last week, economists said that the downturn in the economy may already be over. The layoffs following September 11th have slowed, and a new survey of American businesses found that 21% of firms interviewed plan to add jobs this spring. But in the midst of all this tentative optimism, how are American workers faring? For the laid-off tech worker in Boston or auto worker in Detroit, sunny economic forecasts matter less than having a steady job. We're taking an intimate look tonight at the laid-off life in America 2002. Have you tasted the laid-off life? And was it crushing or manageable? What new survival skills have you learned for an economy where nothing is certain? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-TALK. That's 1-800-423-8255. Joining us tonight is Marcy Shore Hirsch, a management consultant at Hirsch Hills Associates in Newton, Massachusetts. She's former director of the Career Center at Wellesley College. Good evening and welcome, Marcy Shore Hirsch.
Good evening.
Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Also joining us from the studios of Vermont Public Radio is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, a senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom. Welcome back.
It's good to be back, Jack. Marcy Shore Hirsch,
yes.
Take us on a walk through the deserts of the laid-off world. The slowdown has affected everyone from entry-level workers just out of college right up to mid-career managers and top executives.
Mm-hmm.
How has the recession hit each group of these workers?
Well, it certainly hasn't skipped anybody. It really has been felt throughout the different levels in organizations. And, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with people's expectations. That's been an element, I think, that's made this particular recession exquisitely painful for a lot of people.
In what sense, Marcy?
Well, our expectations, for example, for new workers, those are people who are coming out, for example, of colleges in the past year or so. Those are folks who entered college at a time when life was booming, and their hopes and expectations were that they would come out, join a dot-com, make a bazillion dollars, and, you know, move on with their
life. That's the way it would be.
Yeah. And, of course, you know, between the time they entered college and the time they exited, everything changed. And this whole sense of the rules changing while the game goes on and you're playing in it is really what's happened to everybody at all levels.
I guess we talk about the laid-off life, but for some, those just coming out of college, it may be the employment that never began. I see the unemployment rate for males between 20 and 24 was 10.6% last month. That's high.
It's double what we were looking at before recession. And it's things like college recruiting, which are good sort of bellwethers, are way down. And consulting firms are feeling the impact, less business because of companies having much more of a struggle to make a profit. Well, those consulting firms aren't hiring the way they were. So the recession works its way through the economy, and some of the jobs that had been traditionally most attractive to young workers are least available.
Talk to us about young workers then, and we'll go right through middle management and on up. But
okay.
Young workers who have had a job and probably had a job for their first time in a boom economy, now they run into the buzzsaw of a recession, they're out of a job. What do you see? How is that tier of the workforce handling being laid off?
Well, it's a combination of total shock and amazing resiliency. Many of them have never had a professional job before. This might have been their very first.
Mm-hmm.
And they really have no context to put this sudden turnaround into in their own minds. So they didn't see it coming. They thought it was going to go on forever. They didn't know it could ever be like this, and they are walloped.
Do they take it with more aplomb than older workers who may never have been laid off and who have?
I think yes. Mm-hmm. I think yes, only because oftentimes they have a little more flexibility in their lives at this point. They probably don't have a couple of kids in college. They probably don't have a big mortgage yet. And so a lot of them have said, well, this is crummy, but, you know, I've always wanted to hike the Appalachian Mountain Trail. And I've been surprised to see how many of them have said, I'll look for a job, but there's no big rush because there's nothing out there anyway. And so
How do they live, Marcy, during those times? Are they leaning back on the parental pocketbook, or
well,
is it
plenty of
savings?
Them are living at home. We all know that.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are doing the real service level jobs, sort of just enough to make the payments required.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of waiting it out. Others, of course, are looking, but if they're looking to go back in where they exited, they can't do that.
Mm-hmm. And is there a stigma in the 20-something tier, or is this just the way the economy works in their minds?
Oh, absolutely the way the economy works. Because the other thing is, remember that these were people they were living with, as the kids like to say, 24/7. In the dot-coms, they practically had cots in their offices so they could stay, work, and play all day long and all night long. This was their social life as well as their work life. So they've got a lot of company who really understand exactly what happened because it happened to them too.
They're not alone. For middle managers, it must not be so easy to take.
That's much more selective. That's a situation where very oftentimes the company with which they were working has continued to go on. They, however, have been eliminated from that workforce. And so that feels a lot more lonely, a lot more personal. I have found that folks in those situations struggle a great deal more. Again, lifestyle, they are probably financially much more committed.
Mm-hmm.
But also their work life, their most productive years, the years of their most significant anticipated career growth, has really been truncated.
And nobody wants to see that slip by unproductively.
Exactly.
Stand by, Marcy. We've got to take a quick break. We're taking an intimate look tonight at the laid-off life. The talk is all about economic recovery, but the layoffs have gone on. They've been large. Many people have lost their jobs. Maybe you, maybe someone you know. Are you laid off? Are you afraid of being laid off? Are you living the laid-off life? How are you dealing with it? Are you broke yet? Are you sweating? Are you confident? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're taking an intimate look at the laid-off life tonight. The economy may be recovering, but a lot of people don't have jobs back yet. Many have lost jobs. There are more job losses to come, even if there's a recovery on the way. How does it look from your vantage point? Are you living the laid-off life? How are you dealing with it? And if you've got your job, how secure does it feel? Do you find yourself imagining the laid-off life? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jack Beatty, you hear in Marcy Shore Hirsch's observations a new attitude toward among younger workers about being laid off, but still it means there's no paycheck.
Yeah, it sure does. And it's a big change. I mean, what we have now is a business cycle turned down. But there's also a structural problem, and I think Ms. Hirsch alludes to it, and that is that the job is just not what it used to be. In the 20s, when the Lynns wrote their Middletown, a survey of life in Muncie, Indiana, they found the most dramatic difference between white and blue-collar workers was that the blue-collar workers were often not in work. It's at various points in the year, they would be laid off and then be brought back to work.
It was just part of the cycle of being a blue-collar worker.
That was part of the cycle of being a blue-collar worker. And now the condition of the blue-collar worker has become the condition of the white-collar worker. Insecurity of employment is just built into the nature of the new social contract. And all employees are, in a sense, temporary. One management expert wrote in the 90s describing this new whole sort of business culture. And there was something, companies found something out, that when you cut employees in numbers, your stock price rises. And there's something perverse about that.
Yeah.
That you know, you can actually, by sort of doing what we could call social harm, unemployment, you get financial good. And that is I think going to be a permanent feature of this sort of insecure world economy we're in now. And it's brought forth some sort of strikingly blunt statements of the new philosophy. Let me quote to you from a book called Corporate Executions by a management consultant named Alan Downs, who was sort of explaining the perspective of the employer in the 90s. He says, quote, "You buy the people power you need to keep the business running. When you discover that you have more people than you need, you stop buying as many. Employees are interchangeable components that can be plugged in wherever and whenever they are needed. They are disposable as well. When the demand for their services has subsided, they can be discarded." That's sort of the kind of the, if you were to put sort of the unconscious of what's of corporate America in the 90s.
But that's hardly shocking anymore, is it, Jack? I mean, that's just the way of the world these days, isn't it?
But that's a dramatic change, Tom, from what the job meant as recently as 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's a historic change for white collar workers.
It sure
who
is.
Had a kind of security that they probably are never going to have again.
Jack, Marcy Sorher, stand by. I want to bring in Doug Dixon. He joins us now. He's vice president of New Directions, a career counseling firm for senior executives, the very white-collar workers, Jack, that you're talking about. Good evening, and welcome, Doug Dixon. Good to have you.
Thanks, Tom. Pleasure to be here.
Doug Dixon, talk to us about this tier, the middle managers, the senior managers, those who Jack and Greg Ippett with the Wall Street Journal earlier were pointing out are among those vulnerable. Nobody is exempt anymore. The sort of bomb that can be dropped in your life of being laid off or losing a job for under whatever corporate restructuring circumstances can come to anybody these days. You deal with the white collar and very often the top white collar. Are you seeing more job losses in that tier, and how are people coping with it?
I think in general, at this point, the experience among people at the very top of the organization isn't felt in the same way as it is lower down in the organization. After all, during these difficult times, somebody has to steer the ship. Somebody has to make the tough decisions about how companies ride out the storm.
And yet we see the numbers for metropolitan areas that may have 500 or 1,000 former CFOs out of work. I mean, that's someone's helping the ship ride out the storm. But when you go beyond the couple of top mates that need to stay there to steer, there are still people who are losing their jobs.
Well, during this recession, I think the people who have lost their jobs at those levels have been those who worked for companies that didn't make it, particularly early stage companies. that didn't get their next round of funding mm-hmm. or weren't able to make it. In contrast to organizations that were more stable and were able to ride out the storm.
So you're looking at a top-level workforce that has more job security, but nothing like complete job security. And when companies go down, obviously executives go down with them.
Exactly. The thing actually that we're seeing, I think, more so than job loss from the economic downturn is continued industry consolidation and other changes that may, in fact, be accelerated by the economic downturn.
Consolidation often means job losses. You don't need two CFOs in a consolidated company.
Precisely.
So,
I would add is that the tenure of people in their jobs, even at the highest level, is diminishing.
Mm-hmm.
And the average CEO tenure is about half of what it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So they may be employed, but they may be sequentially employed. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I would say that they have a sense of real guaranteed employment in the same role, perhaps, but not in the same company.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's right. The average tenure now is down to around 3 years or less.
Mm-hmm. Marcy Shorehurst, what's the emotional cycle of the layoff? Is it, you see, I don't know if it's consistent across, you know, people at different levels within organizations, but what's the typical kind of psychological drama that people go through when they face a layoff and then work on through it?
Well, it's job loss, and the emphasis is on the word loss. And people deal with it almost the way they deal with other kinds of loss in their lives that are significant. And so just like the loss of a person that you love or a relationship that you care about, the loss of a job that you care about that you have been psychologically invested in is very serious. And people really do feel that, and they really go through the cycle just as they would with any other sort of loss in their lives. And that includes everything from disbelief to anger through the reconciliation stages.
Doug Dixon, you must have seen these phases. Would you see grief, anger, reconciliation? Are those phases familiar to you?
Absolutely. And I think in this respect, people at the top of organizations feel the impact of this change in no different way than others at the organization. People are people. And in fact, if you've been separated from something that you've very much identified with, it takes a while to make the adjustment. And until the adjustment is made, you really can't be prepared for the job search process and finding something to replace what you've lost.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of callers who want to join this conversation. Let's turn to them. Palmer is on the line. Welcome, Palmer. You're on the air.
Greetings. Yes, I'm on. What's going on?
You're on, Palmer.
Oh, Farah. Well, I was mentioning to your dispatcher that I was one of the recently unemployed back in September 27th in direct correlation to what was happening, obviously, in New York and Washington. I was a middle manager in a travel company, and as you know, the travel industry was gutted.
Mm-hmm. And so you lost your job?
Absolutely.
And are you yet employed again?
Oh, of course not. Most people, I live here in Boston, Massachusetts, and strangely enough, you run into your colleagues who are out of work and friends of friends who are out of work, and you talk to people and like, well, have you got a job? And of course they haven't. And you send out your resumes, and you get this suspicion that there is no work. And yet, at the same time, all the economic indicators say to us that, oh, you know, the economy is doing great.
It's coming back.
My suspicion is that it's more people are doing less work, more work for less money.
Palmer, what's the experience been like for you? Is this the first time you've been laid off?
Yes.
And how did it feel? What cycles did you go through?
Well, I mean, of course, working in the industry I worked in, there is, of course, you know, you have to understand what happened and how that affected the airline, the travel industries combined.
So you weren't taking it personally?
Not particularly, no. But often I did feel that the company I worked for and my other colleagues, we did suspect it was more of a business decision, that there were, like, greater layoffs and cuts in staffing that were absolutely necessary at the time.
Mm-hmm. They're sort of using the cover of 9/11.
Absolutely. Just taking advantage of that opportunity.
How are you doing emotionally, financially? It's been a while.
Emotionally, it's okay. Financially, luckily, living in the state of Massachusetts, I think, which has maybe the second or third highest, you know, unemployment and insurance benefits in the country, one can get by. The unfortunate thing is that although, you know, people aren't working, the other economic things, the cycle of, like, you know, rents and the other pricing still stay the same. So mm-hmm. it's like you're living in the economy from, like, you know, 10 months ago, and you've had your income cut in half.
Palmer, what's the size of your unemployment check?
It's pretty good. It's probably about $600 every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks, but your rent hasn't gone down.
Oh, of course not, and it won't go. It won't. Those rents won't go down probably till next year. If they go down at all, if anything, they'll stabilize.
How long do you imagine you may be unemployed?
Well, I just recently was very fortunate to actually finally go on an interview, and I don't know. I keep thinking that, you know, it could take you know, maybe till, you know, April, May, even June. And the strange thing is, like, you know, I've known people in the Boston area who've been out of work since last July. And we're talking about, like, you know, white collar, you know, graduate degrees, the whole bit.
That's a long time. Palmer, we wish you good luck with your job hunt. Marty's on the line. Welcome, Marty. You're on the air. Hello, Marty. Are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Hi.
Okay, my battery's going low. I've been waiting so long.
I'm sorry.
Just kidding.
What's your story, Marty?
Oh, I've learned a few lessons. I've been unemployed. Let's see. I'm a high-tech salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
In the past 4 years, about three times.
And for about how long each time, Marty? Is it just a couple of weeks or longer than that?
5 6 months. Five or 6 months.
That's hard. Mm. What's the impact been on your life?
I learned a few things. Family's very important.
Mm-hmm.
And so is God, because I got through it that way. I also found out that executive recruiters were useless.
recruiters.
They wanted to put buttonhole you, and I found out that the best thing to do was try to break out of what you did in the past,
mm-hmm.
extend yourself, because the next time it happened to me was easier, and mm-hmm. I was able to move into, I had more skills.
Marty, how have you kept your spirits up?
My what?
Your spirits.
I play hockey, I play guitar, and write poetry.
I guess that'll do it, but that's not the same as getting a paycheck, is it?
No, and medical insurance is a killer when you're let go. Medical insurance is a killer. Mm. And I wish that could be changed, because, I mean, you're really very vulnerable at that time, and you got to pay this incredible amount of money to cover your family.
Marty, do you have confidence that you're going to get back to a place where continued unemployment will not be part of your life?
No, I don't know that, mm-hmm. but I'm employed. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'm employed now.
Right.
And, you know, for all the trouble and pain it was, I learned so much, and I developed skill set a lot more,
mm-hmm.
because I actively pursued finding a new job, and maybe that's because I'm in sales. You know, I found out that, you know, I found out how to find a job. You know, you have to go directly to the hiring manager. You don't go through HR. And that was a lot more effective than, you know, waiting for something to happen.
Marty, it sounds like you're going to be a pro at this. We wish you Godspeed and good luck with all of this.
I don't want to be a pro. I want to be an amateur for the rest of my life.
Okay. Thanks for calling, Marty. We appreciate
it.
What Marty is talking about, I think, Tom, is really important, because he's talking about developing the skills to live in this new economy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole different skill set than lifetime tenure required.
Well, what are those skills, Marcy Shorehurst?
Well, he talks, for example, about understanding how to find a job.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing, but I'm expecting, that he probably is thinking about keeping his skills very current. He talked about branching out so that he would be employable in a different sector should he need to be. This is this career resiliency, this notion that you're prepared all the time to kind of pick up your portfolio and go,
mm-hmm.
and get reemployed, is something that is now a normative part of the job.
Mm. Doug Goodson,
if I might.
Oh, Jack Beatty, yes.
May I just put in for a second?
Please.
There was a Fortune study of this, and Fortune found that 75% of executives got their jobs through networking, whereas only 25% of regular employees did. And their advice was network, network, network from day one. That when you're in job A, start networking already for job B, because that's apparently what executives do, and it works for them.
The Department of Labor, over the years, has consistently said that about 4/5 of jobs come from networking. Now, that may not be the kind of networking you're thinking of when you use the term of a cocktail party, clinking glasses, and talking to other high-level people. Sometimes it's just mentioning to the butcher when you're picking up your hamburger that your brother-in-law is looking for something.
Right, but there may be a limit to all that. Doug Dixon, I know personally, my email has been full of friends and distant acquaintances networking, just sort of sending out mass emails. What Doug Dixon, Jack Beatty had mentioned earlier, now talked about this notion realization that we're all temporary now. Do you see a new kind of attitude toward work? And is there a new American worker in the flexibility, in the kind of even nomadic quality that may be encouraged by these layoffs?
I think it's certainly true that someone who's been through it has made a kind of mental adjustment and is better prepared the next time through. I think it's, even though intellectually you may have a concept that, in fact, you're vulnerable and your job may disappear one day, it still is a very difficult challenge when it happens to you. To the point that Marcy made earlier, I think people have made that kind of attitude adjustment or are prepared to make it.
Mm-hmm.
But to Jack's point, a lot of activity that people engage in terms of the job search process isn't very productive. And even in terms of networking, you can network the wrong way and not make good use of that time.
So you've got to be good even at that. Jay's on the line. Welcome, Jay. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Jay.
Hi. I wanted to go back to something that Mr. Beatty was saying earlier about how we're all sort of temporary workers now with very little job security.
Mm-hmm.
Because it really, you know, it just didn't feel like that 2 or 3 years ago. If you had skills in the IT industry.
Well, of course, the boom was on and everybody needed
right.
you.
I myself lived through that. I worked for, I live up here in Lexington, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
I worked for a dot-com company that went boom and then went bust.
What's your experience been since then, Jay?
Well, due to some layoffs, I've been sort of moved into an unexpected management position. I'm just old enough to have, like, had a real job previous to this one.
Okay.
So I've lived through other times, you know, in other corporate atmospheres.
So are you now the one handing out the pink slips?
I am. I am personally about to have to lay somebody off in 2 days who does not see it coming in the least bit.
I don't know if I hope they're listening or not.
I hope he's not. I hope, I think about it. He was hired. He's young. He's... and he has what they call, you know, mad programming skills.
Mm-hmm.
And he
has
never
excellent.
Had a job outside of this, you know, economic atmosphere that we had 2 years ago.
Could you have imagined a couple of years ago letting go of someone like that?
No, no one would have. No, you'd be insane to, because the benefits that were being given out, the perks, you know, you did everything you could to hire anybody who could, you know, basically turn on and turn off a Windows, you know, computer.
Mm-hmm. Jay, do you see colleagues who are just good at this and accept and expect this kind of fluidity in their job life, or is it always going to be jarring?
I don't really know the answer to that. It would jar me.
Doug Dixon.
I just want to say, in response to this individual's experience, the resiliency requires sometimes that you think about doing different kinds of things, and we can come back and talk a little bit more about creating your own job as opposed to waiting to find a job that already exists.
It sounds like it's all about resiliency. Jay, thanks for your call and good luck with that laying off you've got to do tomorrow. Listeners, we're talking about the laid-off life. Are you leading it? Are you dealing with it? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the laid-off life tonight. We're joined by Doug Dixon. He's vice president of New Directions, a career counseling firm for senior executives, and Marcy Shore Hirsch, management consultant at Hirsch Hills Associates in Newton, Massachusetts. You can join us as well. Are you laid off? Are you afraid of being laid off? Is the layoff just part of the American routine now, or is it still a trauma? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Doug Dixon, you were saying just before the break that people have to be ready to create their own jobs. That sounds very ambitious.
Well, I think increasingly people are not willing to wait for jobs to be created or to find a job that's open, but rather to play a larger, more active role in the process.
So are you talking about becoming an entrepreneur or something else?
Well, there are people who choose to do that, people who are basically buying a job by buying a business, people who are looking to create something. In some cases, people who are selling themselves into roles to solve problems in organizations where, in fact, the organization hasn't quite before that point figured out how, in fact, to create an opening that will allow that to happen.
So maybe they're looking at the organization and saying, you need me to do X, Y, or Z.
I think that's exactly right.
That's very forward-leaning. Tom is calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Welcome, Tom. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Just fine, thanks.
The reason I'm calling is that I moved to Providence last year from New Jersey, mm-hmm. where I had been teaching. Prior to that, I had worked in publishing for quite a number of years, and I decided to make a change into teaching. And just after I moved to Providence, that's when the economy went sour.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, I'm teaching at adult education centers. And while
are they crowded, Tom, with people who are
actually? Yeah, there are a lot of some of the places I teach at have students who can't speak English very well. You know, like they're immigrants, mm-hmm. English is a second language, and they want English and computers. And so, yeah, those classes are crowded, and even for those who can speak English, the people are getting retraining.
Mm-hmm. So people are looking for retraining, and that's a kind of occupation for you in delivering for them. Thanks for your call, Tom. Marcy Shore Hirsch, do we see a boom in people going back to schools? We read that's very popular with young people these days. Stay in school.
Well, there's always been a history in the American economy of a kind of counter-cyclical pattern, which is that when the economy is bad, people go back to get extra education to give them a little bit of extra leverage.
Mm-hmm.
The cost of taking time out of the workforce when you're not employed is obviously less opportunity cost
mm-hmm.
to that.
Mm-hmm.
But also I think people, along with the career resiliency notion, are beginning to understand that the key to all of this is to keep on learning and to recognize that the way to, as Doug was saying, make a job may also be to morph your job and to learn the kinds of things that can be incredibly invaluable to your employer, so that if that employer no longer needs you to do X, you're well prepared to do the thing that, in fact, they do need the most.
Mm-hmm.
When we were talking earlier about the impact of for mid-level and upper-level employees of being laid off, we have a client at the moment who is laying off and hiring at the same time.
Now, why is that?
Well, that's what all the laid-off employees are asking. But if you actually look at it, it's because as they are redirecting their business, following the strategy, responding to contextual changes in the marketplace, what they need to do is different. And hence, mm-hmm. what they need their employees to be skilled at is different.
Boy, you've really got to be up on your toes. It's just be there at the cutting edge or be square, be laid off.
You've got to be a scanner. You've got to be looking ahead all the time to see where is that opportunity going to be.
Well, sounds exhausting, but that's the American way. Aaron is on the line. Welcome, Aaron. You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
We're well, thanks.
I just called earlier in response to the comment about young people having just graduated from college, newly entered into the workforce, taking a lot of time off and not worrying about it.
Well, maybe for a while.
Well,
what's your story?
I graduated from college a year ago mm-hmm. and decided to go into a service career, in teaching,
uh-huh.
not as financially rewarding as my friends who graduated in the same year went off to make big money in consulting and in sales and dot-coms.
But were you thinking this might be more stable, Aaron?
No, it's just what I want to do. It's
okay.
What I'm good at.
Okay.
And now they're taking time off, and they're collecting unemployment while they're making more than me on unemployment, and I'm being told that I may not have the job I was promised.
You mean, so you're doing your teacher training or finishing it up, and there may not be a job for you on the other side of that?
Well, I'm in an internship program that mm-hmm. you work in the school for the year and take graduate courses, and in reward for that, you're pretty much guaranteed a job in the system.
So what lesson do you take away from this, Aaron?
Well, I think that might be another show on why our society doesn't value teachers.
Oh, I got
it. I just think it's kind of ironic, but I'm glad that my friends are resilient and that they're enjoying their time off, I suppose.
Well, it sounds like a Friends episode, the people on unemployment doing better than the people getting ready to work or on internships. Aaron, thanks for your call. Eric is calling from Cadillac, Michigan.
Good evening.
Hi, Eric. Welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you. Well, I was telling your screener, I was spent over 20 years as an aerospace engineer.
Okay.
And was laid off last summer
mm-hmm.
and struggled mightily between working construction and working another job at night, trying to make make it back into the industry. Fortunately, I've made it back now.
How was it? How much ground do you feel you lost in those months laid off, Eric?
A lot of ground.
In what terms? Financially, well, psychologically?
I would say financially was probably the biggest impact. I had to do and play a lot of games in order to make my house payment, make health insurance payments, and it was difficult from the beginning.
Did you have to dig into your retirement savings?
Yes, I did.
Significantly?
Significantly, yes. Mm,
that's got to hurt after all those years of saving.
Yep, it did, and hopefully I can stick around for a while again and rebuild things back. It'll be difficult.
But you're back in the business. You're back in aerospace.
Yes, I am.
So you made it to the other side. Eric, thanks very much for your call. Doug Dixon, how about the lasting impact of these layoffs? Do people pay for years for 6 months of laid-off time and what they've had to dish out of their retirement?
There are times when people need to dig in and as a result have a kind of hole to climb out of. In my experience, though, dealing with the people that we specialize in working with, that's not typically the case.
Mm-hmm. And Marcy, how about at more middle and lower management positions and not management positions? Is there often a long-term financial impact on people from a laid-off time?
Oh, yeah, there can be. People certainly, in a cumulative sense, really do lose ground economically.
Mm-hmm.
They're not continuing to contribute to pension plans, for example, in addition to using some of their savings in current living expenses. Mm-hmm. So it really does take a big chunk. It also means if you're changing fields continually, trying to stay out there in front, that you may not have the experience level you had in your old role.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not necessarily coming in as senior as you would be if you were staying in the same field.
So you're in the hot field, but you're no longer the senior person there.
Exactly.
That's a brave new world. We wish everybody good luck in it. Marcy Shore-Hirsch is management consultant at Hirsch Hills Associates in Newton, Massachusetts. Thanks very much for joining us, Marcy.
You're welcome.
And Doug Dixon is vice president of New Directions, a career counseling firm for senior executives. Doug, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Jack Beatty, there's the new world. As you say, we're all temporary now.
Yes, and never has the case been made for social innovation more than now. People are paying into pensions and they're not vesting. They're not getting medical insurance because medical insurance is tied to the job. Here is a room for political and social creativity to try to match our social provisions with what the economy is now doing.
So if we want to be productive, innovative, and fluid economically, and let's be the same socially.
We need a safety net. We need a safety net more than ever.
Well,
precisely for those reasons, to make us more flexible.
Right, to make that economy work without crushing people's fingers.
That's right, exactly.
Jack Beatty, stand by. We're going to hear from now, in a little change of gears, from Enron. CEO Jeff Skilling. He was back in the hot seat today as the Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee questioned him about the company's accounting practices, sitting alongside Enron whistleblower Sharon Watkins, who has blamed Skilling for knowingly inflating earning statements. He was defiant in claiming he had no knowledge of questionable partnerships that hid the company's troubled financial situation. Here's an excerpt of Jeff Skilling today being questioned by California Senator Barbara Boxer.
Mr. Skilling, you didn't have a written testimony, but I took some notes, and your opening statement was extremely compassionate to the employees. And I want to show you a tape, and I believe we have it ready to go, which was a meeting that took place in 2000, December. Is that the right date?
I'll be honest with you guys.
99.
All of our 401k
and
Enron job, absolutely.
Don't you find it great? And what was the date of that? Okay, so that at the end of 99, you agreed by laughing and shaking your head that the employees should, in fact, invest their money in Enron. I think anyone seeing that would say that you were nodding in agreement. Why is it that you had begun unloading your stock pretty heavily before that date, and yet led the employees to think they should keep buying stock?
Ms. Senator, I have been a major shareholder in Enron Corporation. I am currently a major shareholder in Enron Corporation. Enron Corporation has constituted virtually 90% of my net worth from the entire time that I worked for the company. I was a strong believer in Enron Corporation. Now, you can take the videotape to mean what you want it to mean. I was a supporter of Enron Corporation.
Yes,
I believe.
But how much had you unloaded at that point, by that point?
The term unloaded, I think, is a little bit of a
I'll say it in a more direct way. How many shares had you sold up to that point, and what was your money that you had pulled out of that stock at the time that you shook your head and said yes to the question, which was, should we put all of our money, all? And you know what happened to those people. They lost everything. And you had a chance to be honest with them, and you shook your head yes. What is it in your recollection that you had already sold?
Listen, I feel terrible about what happened to the employees. I think if we want to do a dueling videos also, there's a videotape of an employee meeting 2 months later where I go in pretty excruciating detail what some of the issues are that the company's dealing with. I think I was open to employees, and I think as long as I was
okay,
at the
company, so you don't have the answer, so let me put it in the record. In 99, the same year that tape was recorded, and you can look at it over and over again, you agreed.
I thought you said it was 2000.
This was in 99, the end of 99. By 2000,
you're saying this is December.
Even much. Yes.
December of 1999.
Yes, I'm just putting the record because my time is up. The insider records show you had sold more than 513,000 shares of Enron for $22 million at a time when you were nodding in agreement for those people to put everything in their 401k into the company. I just want to get that in the record.
Excuse me, Matt. I would like to see the basis of that number. You're saying
really?
In the year 1999,
yes.
I sold 500,000 shares of Enron
stock?
We
have the records for it. We'll send them over to you during
this
next
question. All right, then we'll send you records, too, because
yes.
I believe that number's incorrect.
Okay, we'll show you the records.
Former Enron CEO Jeff Skilling responding to the questions of California Senator Barbara Boxer during today's Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee hearing. Jack Beatty, it strikes me listening to that among other things what we have on Capitol Hill is a meeting of two cultures alien to one another. Jeff Skilling was debating there with Senator Boxer the size or the volume of shares he sold in 1999. But you know, Jack, in 1999, a lot of people were selling a lot of shares, and it was a long way from the fall of 2001 when Enron finally came crashing down.
Yeah, but let's turn the dial up to that point. In August of 2001, Ken Lay, this was after Skilling left abruptly, and there was a good deal of concern within the company about its health, and Ken Lay called a meeting. And at that meeting, he told people, this is a great time to buy Enron. Ken Lay in August. This is after he had been told by Sharon Watkins that the company was heading toward implosion. It was one financial scandal removed from implosion. And after he had sold himself $70 million worth of stock that year, he told the employees, this is a great time. The Wall Street Journal today had a story about one. She put $480,000, everything she had, into Enron then. And in 2 months, it was worth $23,000.
Of course, Sharon Watkins testified today that she doesn't think Ken Lay understood what was going on with Enron's finances, that he had one last chance to save the company, and he missed it through incomprehension.
Well, this is quite a statement about one of the great executives, apparently, of our time. And it's a subtext of this whole case. Why is everybody trying to make Ken Lay out to be, a sort of D's, Do's, and Dems guy when he's one of the most successful people in the world?
He's no D's, Do's, and Dems guy.
No, sir.
No, sir. Jack, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is W.